Welcome to Dealcast, the voice of Merger Market, the world's leading publication about mergers and acquisitions. I'm Juliana Needham. This is our last episode of the year, so we're finishing off with a very special episode. 2025 has been a record-breaking year for deal-making across many areas, but particularly for mega deals. An unprecedented 70 mega deals took place. There was also the biggest ever all-cash bid to date and the largest ever leverage buyout. That's the takeover of Electronic Arts. And the year has ended with a headline-grabbing bidding war for Warner Brothers. But whilst the year may have ended on a high note following a surge of deals since the summer, the first half of the year was rather different. So for this episode, Merger Market's global editor Lucinda Guthrie spoke to Liz Claydon. Liz is the global head of deal advisory and global sector lead for life sciences at KPMG. They look back at 2025 and explore the big trends on the horizon for next year.
Thank you for joining us, Liz. As global head of deal advisory at KPMG, you must see an awful lot of activity. And this year has been an absolute roller coaster,
hasn't it?
We started off with, I remember talking about Animal Spirits and we were this bumper year, and then suddenly Liberation Day happened.
Yep.
And there was a complete pause and everyone was like, well, what's happened, Lucinda? And then in Q3 and Q4, we've ended up with this bumper year for mega deals. What do you feel has changed?
Great to be here. Thank you for the invitation and great timing. I'm coming up to the third year now of being head of deal advisory at KPMG globally, having run the UK business for 4 years prior to that. But in the 3 years I've been head of global deal advisory, I finally think we've got some good news to share on the deal market. So I think we've had so many false dawns, haven't we, over the last few years, where we've had a few months where it started to look like the deal market was coming back, and then something's happened, whether that's been what's been going on geopolitically or economically. But no, this year has been really interesting. I mean, I'm a football girl, as you know. I'm a big Liverpool fan. So I do really think this year has really been the game of two halves. Mm. So as you said, first half of the year, we kind of really, with the new administration, everyone got quite excited. We were going to start to see, the deal market pick up. And it sort of stuttered to life a little bit. You know, we'll talk about some of the bigger deals that have happened, I think, later in the conversation. But, you know, we had a big life sciences deal in January, I seem to recall. We had what was going on in terms of OpenAI and some of the huge investments that would be made in that space. And then it really stuttered, I think, through February, March and into April, as you say. And then we got to Liberation Day and then obviously the tariffs, and that just put a lot of processes on hold. It spooked a lot of the markets, as you would expect. But the second half, we've really seen that pick up. And I'm sure we'll talk about the reasons why, but I'd say the second half of the year we have seen our activity pick up globally. I think the US in particular has really driven that growth, but we've seen that across pretty much all of the regions in our business and in the market. So, and sector-wise, yes, technology's been a big part of it, but lots of deal activity in other sectors as well. So pretty excited where we end the year. And I think we'll talk about the outlook, but I think it should continue into Q1 and 2. I'm be interested to hear your views.
Well, the thing is, we've had this record year for mega deals, right? 70 mega deals this year. So that's deals over 10 billion, right? I personally feel that for much of this year, that the economic landscape has been uniquely placed for larger cap companies to transact because they can cushion the volatility. I think the first deals to come through were pretty much all technology. So there was the Google Wiz transaction.
That's right.
Huge cybersecurity.
Yeah. That was March, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's not going away anytime soon, that trend. No. And then we've seen more, as the year's gone through, we've seen more sectors come into that. But why do you think it is just the mega caps, really?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because what's the stat that really startled me when I was looking at literally a couple of weeks ago is that the top 10 mega deals in 25 are 50% higher in terms of deal value than in 24. 50%.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. So you then step back and go, yeah, what's going on? Well, I guess we'll come on to some of the very large deals that are right in the press right now, but there's some very big deals, and I don't think we had that in 24. So that obviously does skew the data a little bit. But I think honestly, Lucinda, there's a bit of CEOs getting more confident, seeing disruption as the new norm, and recognising with what's coming at us around technology, around ways of working, around deglobalisation. Actually, I think, you know, a lot of companies are kind of thinking, actually, there's going to be winners and losers here, and we want to be winners. And therefore, we're going to actually think strategically, think longer term. And I think that's what we've started to see in some of these big deals that are playing out right now.
When you think about that disruption, how do you approach that with CEOs or the companies you advise? What advice do you give them?
Look, I think it starts with the what's the deal thesis, you know, no surprise. So, you know, where is the current business? What's the strategic priorities of the current business? And then where does M&A fit into that landscape? So we release a CEO outlook survey every year, comes out end of October towards the beginning of November, I think. So this year, 89% of the global CEOs surveyed said that they expect M&A to play either a significant or an important role in their plans for the next 3 years. Now, that was a lot lower last year. I'd have to look at the stat last year to compare against it. But so I think CEOs are realizing they need to do something different. I think the advent of AI and technology is actually helping deal making and deal doing, because actually, you know, value creation, which is a big buzzword that you and I have been talking about for many years now, is so important in terms of the assessment of the synergy case, really thinking about where that value can be created, but more importantly, how it can be realized. So I think a lot of the conversations we're having with our clients very early on in the deal conversation, in the pre-deal, when we're starting to think about diligence, is how are you going to realize those synergies and what are the plans to realize those synergies?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point that you're picking up, because I think that two of the things we've seen this year, we've seen these huge mega cap transactions. We've also seen some mergers unwinding. People looking at, rather than having scale for scale's sake, I'm going to demerge part of that business I bought a few years ago. Yeah. And I'm going to double down on where I yep. feel the future's going. Now, that has led to a lot of criticism from observers in the industry about, oh, well, does M&A really create value or not?
Yep. Great question. And I'm afraid I can't give the most positive news there, because, you know, we look at this, as do lots of other strategic and consultants, et cetera. And the evidence is pretty much similar on all surveys I see. I mean, ours talks about 57% of deals fail to create value. Now, I must say that is public deals. So that's where there's publicly available information. So, but that's a pretty stark stat. And if you peel that back to why is that, it comes back to exactly what I was talking about before. Either over optimistic synergy cases or integration plans not fully baked, and therefore the realization of those synergies just not coming through. Or, to be fair, in some situations, things change. Yeah. Disruption changes. Industries are changing far faster than they ever have before. But it comes back to your question before, Lucinda, which is that's why it's so important in terms of going into these large scale transactions to really, really do your homework up front and really be clear on that value case. If I look at our business and where the growth of our business is, yes, still doing a lot of work as you'd expect as a big four in the financial due diligence space. But where we're really seeing the growth is in our strategy, pre-deal and post-deal business, and also our tech business. So our tech integration business, looking at kind of the disruption on different industries, etc.
I think one of the interesting things that I've seen as well, thinking about the post-merger integration piece, that there's two pieces there. One is just how much earlier people are getting involved and thinking about it, rather than, and this is across all types of deal, whether it's private equity and also strategics. But also, I think now, because there's this rush for talent, there's this challenge that people have when you buy a startup for their capabilities, for their talent. How do you keep them in the business
yep.
when they come into this huge organization? Yep. Suddenly, they're not seeing the individual impact, and they might have to oh, you know what it's like being part of a big corporation full of all kinds of different rules rather than just being able to do what you want. Are you advising
big,
people
big
on
pot,
that side?
Big pot. So we'll maybe touch on a little bit the M&A Global Leadership Programme, because I think that's quite interesting. You've been part of that programme where we're working with lots of the big global corporates and private equity firms and sort of talking to their next in line for, next in line for to be head of M&A or an operating partner. The thing that came up very much this year, probably more so than last year when we were in the programme, was around this cultural fit, HR, due diligence. It's called lots of different things. And actually there's some really interesting, again, coming back to the AI and tools and out there around how do you assess that cultural fit? How do you think about who are the roles? Where are the roles that are absolutely critical to the success of the future value of the business? And how do you hone in on, talent retention, talent retraining? I mean, it's a big, big theme out there at the moment. I don't think just in deals, I think in any type of transformation, which is, a lot of the jobs that our employees are doing today will likely change in the future. But it doesn't mean we can't retrain them and retool them to enable to do that. So I think if I come back to why do deals fail, you're absolutely spot on. Quite a lot of the time, it's the lack of the cultural integration. It's the lack of the really detailed plans in terms of, as I said before, going after those synergies, not just in the operational tech part of the business, but absolutely in the people side. And have you got the right incentive strategies, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, I do want to think a little bit, because we mentioned the mega caps. I want to think a little bit about the huge deals that we've had. We've had the largest all-cash bid of all time. We had the largest Japanese take private.
Yes.
The most North American listed takeovers since 2007, which I thought was quite interesting.
Oh, I don't think I heard that stat. Very good one.
No.
I'll add that to my list.
What of all these deals, which deal do you think will have the most impact on M&A? Going into next year?
Oh, that's a big question. And there's a lot to choose from, as you just said. Look, I'll probably be obvious here just because it's so headline news for us at the moment. And I have to say, I was very excited the other night on news at 10. And I said to my husband, M&A's like the third item on the news. He's like, oh my God, you need to get a life, Liz. But clearly I'm talking about the Warner Brothers, the bid for Warner Brothers and obviously the offer that was tabled by Netflix, $87 million, I think I'm right in saying. And then as you say, that's right. Yeah. For the Netflix side. And then obviously Paramount coming in with the all cash bid just last week, I think. But I think rejected for the first time, certainly as of yesterday. So fascinating. Yeah. What do you think about it?
Well, that one, I've got a few. Everyone always laughs at me at work because I have my favourites. And Warner Brothers is definitely a box office.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
To do it. But that one, I mean, the thing for me on the regulatory perspective so far this year, have had the perception of a light touch regulatory environment in the US.
Yes.
And I think this one is going to test
really
that.
Is.
Because I think you've got at the DOJ, Gail Slater, she's a seasoned antitrust practitioner.
Absolutely.
But she's short staffed. They've had a government shutdown. And you've also got the Trump administration's focus on pocketbook issues. So what actually impacts, the average American person? Now, I think Netflix going out there, sending that email that we all got saying, we're going to buy Warner Brothers and you can read Harry Potter. It's not me, sorry.
Everyone's
I love reading
excited.
Harry Potter, but you can watch Harry Potter on Netflix. I think that was their sort of pitch to the American people to say, well, if the government doesn't let this through, you're not going to get all this great content.
Yeah, it's very smart, isn't it, what they've done? And I couldn't agree more. Coming back to why did I think about that when you asked the question, why is that important as we go into 2026? Because I think it absolutely does test, as you say, the appetite to let deals like that, through for the right reasons. I think it's going to be fascinating how it plays out, to be honest. I think there's quite a lot of politics at play, clearly, in what's going on. But what I would say is, and this is sometimes what maybe people, you know, who don't live M&A in the way you and I do and have done for the last 30 years in my case, and probably not, well, you're far younger than me, Lucinda, so I won't say that, but certainly over 20 for you, is by the time a deal gets announced, oh my goodness, so much work has happened. Yeah. I mean, if I had a penny or a pound for every time I've been as a partner at KPMG and someone's saying, oh, there's a deal in the paper, are we involved in that? You know, and thinking that, you know, you've just started work, whereas that work will have been going on for months and months and months, as you know. And the reason I say that is all of these scenarios around regulatory issues, antitrust issues, what should be shares, what should be cash, what's the kind of cash flow and working capital implications, you know, what's the synergy case? So much work will have been done by so many advisors around the world that I find it hard to believe that, you know, a lot of those scenarios haven't already been played out. Now, clearly it needs to be tested, as you say, and go all the way up to the top of the house. So let's wait and see. But if you were a betting person, what do you think on odds?
Oh my gosh, well, it changes every day. One of my colleagues last week, when Jared Kushner was involved in the Paramount side, he felt that, what was it he said? He said something about Netflix having the sort of head start at the minute, but Paramount might walk away with it. But now I'm not so sure. I think the political temperature shifts and I feel like it might be Netflix now. With Jared Kushner taking a step back, I feel it was a real leveler. What the main thing for me is, how will the DOJ and the EC look at the market?
Yeah.
So Netflix are trying to lobby and say, well, it should be all your viewing hours,
yeah,
rather than just looking at streaming. And that's quite interesting.
That is interesting.
Because if you think about YouTube, It's not just television. It's quite a different market.
I mean,
I don't know whether they'll go for that. I don't think so.
I think I'm in the same camp as you sitting here today. As you say, it might change tomorrow or Christmas Eve. But I think I think they've given Paramount till, is it the 8th of January to come back with a revised bid. So I'm not sure we'll sit here and see too much more now over the, but there'll be lots of work going on. But I do think, you know, how people are consuming content is changing. We were just talking before we started here today, weren't we, on some of our favourite podcasts, and how, you know, I listen to podcasts quite often when I'm running. And but now you actually watch a lot of podcasts through Spotify, through YouTube. You know, it's a really, you know, high growth area, this whole creator age, et cetera, et cetera. So it will be how they look at the market, and, you know, is the public perception in all of this got a role to play? I don't know. I'm not an antitrust lawyer, a competition lawyer.
It will be quite interesting, I think, because they both sort of filed for HSR. And I think if Paramount gets an early termination, I do think that might change my view. But like you say, every day I change my mind. So so thinking about mega caps, and you were saying there's, you know, conversations happening all the time. Do you think there's much left in the tank? Because we've had 70 already.
Yeah. Will that level repeat into H1 26? I think that's quite a difficult one to see. Will we continue to see some large transactions in a number of sectors? I think yes. Based on a couple of things, based on conversations that, you know, I'm privy to clearly in the role I have, based on just what's going on, again, around disruption in the sector. I mean, look at life sciences as a sector that, as you know, I know pretty well. Look at kind of all the life sciences companies over the last 3 or 4 years have pretty much all now spun out their consumer healthcare businesses, you know, all huge, huge transactions. And, you know, they've done that because they need, you know, they want to focus more. It was, I think, a word you used earlier, Lucinda. So they're focusing in on that high value life sciences, biopharma space. But to do that, they need to pump more money into R&D to develop new drugs and pipeline of drugs. We've got a patent cliff coming very fast. But also they're using M&A as a way to fill those gaps. Mm. And those assets are expensive and quite often very competitive, particularly in some of the, you know, some of the oncology therapeutic areas, neurology, I'd say is also very much a really hot space. And then GLP-1s, you know, obesity drugs. I mean, what's going on there is just fascinating. So long-winded way of saying, I do think there is quite a lot still to go. If, you know, you look at the consumer sector, Lucinda, as well, you know, we've seen a lot again of Kraft Heinz come out, demerging and splitting their fast-growing business from their more stable business. So I think it's just enabling companies to look again at the portfolios, look again at capital allocation and where they see that going. And you could go through a number of other sectors. You know, there's still a lot to go for, I think. Maybe I'm overly optimistic. In the job I do, it helps to be optimistic.
Yeah, you have to be. I actually think, and I think you were very modest there about knowing life sciences. You're global head of life sciences on top of everything else. But with life sciences, what I think is quite interesting is we had healthcare came back as a sector in October, I think, because before that, the mega deals were mostly tech, as we mentioned. But there's a little deal in the US. There's, I think it was called Aspire, and it just got early HSR termination. And it was seen as an example of what may have been seen under previous administrations as a killer acquisition. And so some of my colleagues feel that there might be a runway for a mega cap pharma deal with all the deals coming off patent. So I'm quite excited to see what happens there. What do you think?
Similarly, I do think there is an opportunity for maybe one or two more, but not much more than that. It's a pretty consolidated industry. I think you get into the regulatory challenges we've just been talking about in the, you know, in the media sector. You get into the where's the capital side of things and how is the funding side of things. I think what's going on in the debt markets is helping, because I think we're starting to see an interest rate decline in a lot of the big major economies around the world. But not straightforward is probably what I would say, Lucinda. So, you know, you've thrown this one at me. I have to give it a bit more thought. I'll be doing that for my Christmas homework. But I do think, you know, there's some interesting changes in, you know, in CEOs going on in the sector at the moment. And, you know, there's, you know, that I think a new CEO always triggers a new strategic review. You know, if not a new strategy, then certainly a refreshed strategy. So I think it definitely is a watch this space. I think there's some fascinating, you know, assets out there that are coming to market. Will they be the big whopper deals that you're talking about, or will they be more to fill in the late stage pipeline, which is what a lot of my clients kind of talking to me about, is where are those assets and you know, at what stage do they become both affordable, because some of the prices are still very, very toppy, but then can they see how they're going to integrate them into their business plans already and be able to really realise that value?
So we talked about life sciences. Obviously, the story for this year has been tech, and I mentioned cybersecurity earlier. We've seen AI infrastructure kind of convergence, if you like, so the kind of rush for data centres.
Yeah.
But valuations are very toppy. Did you know that the average size AI M&A deal now is 2.2 times the size of last year, right? And I think M&A, the value of M&A for AI companies was like, I think it was more than 100% up on last year, but funding round value was up 300%. Right. And my view is basically things are getting too expensive.
Yeah, heard that.
So what do you think? What's your outlook for technology next year? What trends do you anticipate? And do you think we're still going to get deals at these valuations?
So look, I think AI is very much shifting from infrastructure to what I would call enterprise adoption. So what does that actually mean? So actually, how are we embedding, or how clients and companies embedding AI, and indeed what we're doing in our business, into the value chain? So, you know, we've talked about life sciences companies, where I spend a lot of my time. You know, how are they embedding AI into the R&D processes to enable them to get drugs to market faster? So if you bring that back to M&A, I think we'll continue to see this theme and this trend of buying capability. So that could be, you know, in the case of what I've just talked about, smaller startup boutiques who have got an AI ready capability around a therapeutic area and have, you know, are basically going to market in completely different way than you know other other industries in professional services. You know, we're seeing startups actually looking to take a lot of the people out of the process and really do a lot of the due diligence through machine learning, through large language models, through clever data analytics. So I do think that trend is not going anywhere. I think it's going to take a while to see where the winners and losers are on that. Does that mean we'll stop seeing the really big technology deals that, you know, that we've talked about already, the, you know, the Stargate, the, you know, the Wiz deal you mentioned earlier? I think there's still space for a few more of those sort of bigger deals, particularly, you know, data center, et cetera. But I think it's more about enterprise adoption, as I said before, if that makes sense, and where does that play out in organizations? So I think it's really a large theme which we'll see will continue to play out is looking for faster growth kind of brands, but in doing that, digital businesses that aren't part of the current structure of a lot of organizations. And in doing those acquisitions, actually, a big part of that is actually buying that technology or that AI capability. So if you look at what the deal Unilever have done recently in the personal healthcare, which is a brand called Wild. I don't know whether you've come across it, actually, Lucinda. It's all around sustainability and natural product trends. So deodorants without so much better packaging, etc. But, you know, that business was pretty much a startup, and they've bought that business and going to integrate it into their personal care business. So I think there's some really interesting themes and trends going on right now in that whole kind of AI technology, digital space that will continue to play out.
Yeah, I think for me, for tech, the bit that I'm most excited about and watching very closely, I think, is automated driving and self-driving cars. I think that's going to be really interesting. Robotics, right? Yeah. So I think those two for tech on top of the cybersecurity. I do think that we're going to see more of the kind of infrastructure deals coming through. And I agree with you about the enterprise piece as well. It's just, I think those valuations are very challenging now. But I think you touched on something really interesting. In the consumer space, we've got that kind of shift towards more ethical decisions. And I think that's going to come through in consumer. Do you have any other kind of ideas looking to next year about because we often talk about how this year that everyone was focused on thematic resilience and kind of decisive actions. What do you think will be the sectors and trends in that space that kind of roll into next year?
Yeah, look, it's a great question. I think, you know, we've ended the year with what's going on in the media space. I think we'll continue to see the sort of whatever happens with that deal, that will, I think, potentially enable other deals to happen. So I think we'll continue to see some consolidation in the media space. You know, we just talked about it before with what's going on in terms of the, you know, the creator industry and podcasts and this sort of stuff. I mean, this is how people want to consume their media in a completely different way. So we're certainly seeing lots of activity in that space. I think my industry, you know, professional services, legal services, very interesting. Private equity, very interested in what's going on in that space. So I, you know, think we'll continue to see more activity going on there. And then I would say healthcare, you know, if you think of some of the trends, you know, that we're seeing play out, you know, in with the GLP-1s, more healthy living, the impact that's having on other therapeutic areas. That's going to have a huge impact on healthcare systems around the world. That's going to drive consolidation as well. So I could go on, but I think, you know, energy transition, again, lots of activity still happening there. So lots to look forward to, I think, is what I would say, yeah. Lucinda. And feeling actually, you know, I sat and think I did the panel at the beginning of January last year and sort of talked about cautious optimism. And I think in the UK, the deal market is actually, we haven't really talked about the UK, but the deal market's still a little bit muted. You know, we're not seeing
8% down on last year.
Yeah. So we're not seeing the activity in the UK that we're seeing in some of the other countries around the world. I'd say the US is the most important deal market. You know, it's, I think it might, the stat is the The GDP from M&A in the US is double that from EMA and ASPAC. So that just tells you how. And I think the US growth in deals is 54% in value terms this year.
$2.65 trillion.
Incredible. So yeah, I think ASPAC, we talked about Japan, we talked about some of the deals that have been happening there, that we're seeing that as a really fast growing market. Korea, very fast growing market. China's getting better. You know, Germany's holding its own. It's a pretty difficult economic position out there, but we just released an M&A survey, and you know, despite everything around tariffs, only 20% of those surveyed, I think I'm right in saying, are expected to do less deals next year than they did this year. So every sort of trend we're looking at the moment, maybe with the exception of the UK, is pretty positive. Sorry to be a spoiler on that one.
Well, when we looked at our map, most of the world was in green. So our map sort of shows that, you know, things going up, except for the UK. The UK was down. I think Africa was down. China was actually coming back. And it was interesting because when I was in Asia for our ABCJ conference, people were saying that rather than, you know, over the last few years, they felt that, you know, China had been uninvestable. But then now people are thinking, actually, maybe we'll come back to that. And you see that in the numbers.
Totally. And I don't want to keep talking about life sciences, but, you know, really important market for life sciences companies, because the amount of innovation that's happening in China is phenomenal. So, again, probably not had much time to talk about that, but I couldn't agree more. I think there's a lot of activity there. And we haven't really talked about private equity that much, but we're running out of time, I know. But, you know, look, private equity is definitely back. I mean, you know, the stats show it again that, you know, I think this is the second biggest year, if not ever, certainly post the COVID bubble, in terms of the value of private equity as a percentage of overall deals. And again, if you start looking at that over $500 million deals, which is we track because the data just becomes a lot more accurate, you know, it's really positive in terms of what we're seeing in the private equity space across multiple sectors. Lots to look forward to. I think we might need a break over Christmas, get some sleep, and then it's going to be a busy 2026.
Well, I really hope so. I really hope so. So, as you say, we're just running out of time. What do you think is your boldest prediction for M&A for 2026?
Boldest prediction. Well, M&A is cyclical, as you know. Yeah. And I am a bit of a stat and data junkie. So if you look at the trends that we've seen over the peak to peak is on average 7 years, and we're about year three now. So I think we've got a couple of years of really great deal activity ahead of us. So I think that's my bold prediction, that hopefully when we're sat here this time next year, we're looking back on another, you know, not just in terms of volume and exciting deals, but actually deals that are really making a difference and creating shareholder value and creating jobs, etc. It's a, you know, it's a fabulous industry to work in, as you know, and it employs lots of people. So I'm really excited about the year ahead, and yeah, looking forward to further collaboration with Merger Market.
Yeah, thank you so much, Liz. I know you're incredibly busy running global head of deal advisory, life sciences, and everything else you're doing. So thank you so much for making time.
That was Merger Market's global editor, Lucinda Guthrie, who spoke to Liz Claydon, who is the global head of deal advisory and global sector lead for life sciences at KPMG. And just to point out, the episode was recorded on the 18th of December. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed listening, please follow the podcast. And if you're on an app that supports it, please give us a rating and review. To find out more about what we've been talking about on this episode, have a look at our show notes. And it's the last episode of the year. We'll be back in January.